the cool scientist is here. Hello to you, Sean. Good morning.
Morning, Declan.
Good morning. Let's deal with something very topical in the news, and that is the return of the astronaut and the cosmonaut. Yesterday,
that's
it wasn't
right.
just a complete return. There was a significance to, especially Mr. Kelly, being in space for over a year. So, what's the story?
Yeah, so it's Commander Scott Kelly, US astronaut, and he came back with a Russian astronaut, Mikhail Kornienko. And they were 340 days on the International Space Station. So that's the longest time any human being has ever spent in orbit in space. There have been people up there longer, but not in orbit. So it's important because this all takes place in the context of going to Mars. The plan is to go to Mars with a manned mission. Remember, the last manned mission was Apollo, which is a long, long time ago now, is going to be 2030s. And Obama was talking about it. He's put it on the agenda in the States, and he wants to be around for that to happen. So, you know, it looks like it will happen. Now, the thing about it is, it's going to be about a 2-year round trip. So that's a long time to spend in space. Nobody's ever been in space that long, even though 340 days you're getting there, because that's, you know, you're getting towards the length of time you need. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on in space that we don't understand in terms of what happens to the body. We do know that, for example, that the muscles start to break down. So you become weaker. It's kind of like being in bed in hospital. If you notice that anybody who's ever been in bed in a hospital for a long time, that your muscles start to deteriorate because you're not using them. It's the same thing in space, and even more so because you're in a micro or almost zero gravity environment. So that's one thing. But there are other things that happen. Like, for example, your bone tissue will start to break down over time because your skeleton, which kind of keeps you upright on Earth, and it's for gravity, you need your skeleton apart from other things. In a microgravity environment, the bone starts to get reabsorbed back into the blood. It's essentially, it starts to dissolve, you know, and there are a lot of other, there's a psychological aspect as well, because what's going to happen to astronauts in a confined space together over 2 years? You know, what would happen if somebody just started to lose it completely up there? Or, you know, would you be able to predict when you're choosing your astronauts who were the mentally durable ones and all this kind of stuff? So Scott Kelly went up, and the thing about it, there was a perfect experiment because Scott has a twin, and he has a twin who's an astronaut. So while he was up there for 340 days, his twin was down on the ground, Mark, and they did all kinds of tests on Mark, and now they're going to test Scott, and they're essentially genetically identical. So they're going to look at the blood samples, saliva, urine, bone scans, flu shots, ultrasounds, all kinds of things to compare the twin. And because they're genetically identical, if there are differences, then the differences really are down to being in space.
Right.
So it's an interesting one. Now, Scott, he wants to go up again. He's 52. He thinks it might be his last mission. But actually, there's an Italian going up next year who's 58. So these astronauts are getting a bit older. There's also an Irish connection, if I'll briefly tell you about that, if we have time. There's a guy in UCD who may be involved in all of this Mars stuff called Brian Caulfield, because he has a machine that essentially, they're like electrodes that attach onto the astronauts. This is the idea, the astronauts' legs and arms. So when they sleep, these little electrodes go on and off, and they exercise for you, if you like. So NASA is interested in that technology.
Okay, Sean, so the cool scientist. Yeah, interesting as we get closer to Mars. Is there life on Mars? Well, there's a few little microbes, but I don't know if there's any green men. Turning to something else, and this is where the movies are catching up with science. I know there was Inception. You were trying to think of that one recently with Leonardo da Vinci messing with people's minds. I was trying to think of Total Recall, the movie, and it is messing up with people's memories, but science is catching up on this. Tell us.
Yeah, there's a professor who gave a press conference recently, and he's one of the founders of what we know about memory way back in the 70s. The man is called Professor Bliss, a nice name. Way back in the 70s, he was one of the first people that actually found out what scientifically is going on when we lay down a memory in our brain. And he put forth this theory that essentially it's like a muscle. When you fire your synapses in a certain, these are the little connections in your brain, in a certain way, it lays down a memory, like if you're learning piano. But in any case, they were asking him recently at this conference about what he thought in terms of where we're going with memory. And he said that in future, he reckons that it may be possible to implant a memory into somebody's brain, like in science fiction. So the example he gave was Marilyn Monroe. Maybe that his name is Professor Bliss, remember? And he said that you could have a synapse surgeon who could implant the memory of a night with Marilyn Monroe, if you wanted, into somebody's brain. So... So, I mean, yeah, maybe that'd be a good thing. But there is a serious side to this as well. You could have nice memories implanted, but maybe more importantly than that, there are a lot of people who suffer out there because of things that have happened in their life, and they've these horrible, traumatic memories of something that maybe happened a long time ago in their childhood or with the abuse scandals in Ireland.
So you could actually get them taken out, could you?
Exactly. So they're talking about that, you know, if you can insert a memory, we know enough about it, there are essentially these connections in a particular part of the brain, then we can get rid of them too. And as well as that, there's another side, which is Alzheimer's, that Alzheimer's essentially is a problem of memory, because the very first signs of Alzheimer's are that you can't lay down new memories. So if you're in the early stages and you meet a new person that you haven't known for your life, you won't be able to remember them next time. So essentially, this memory thing and the technique to improve memory or to remove memory, it could very well help with Alzheimer's too.
All right.
So that is important work.
Okay. It's the Cool Scientist, Sean Duca, with us this morning. And how about this discovery, why girls are more likely to become compulsive texters than boys?
Yeah, now texting, we know that teenagers absolutely love texting, but you know, if you're on a Dublin bus, you see not just the teenagers, everyone, but particularly the teenagers. This study wanted to see if there's any difference between girls and boys, and they found actually that there's a big difference between girls and boys. They found that virtually all teenagers are texting a lot, but for some of them it's like drugs and alcohol. Essentially, they become compulsive, and if you take it away from them, they feel anxious, frustrated. If they don't have access to texting, they might try and stop texting, but they can't. So it's like an addiction. So they looked at 211 girls and 192 boys that were using texting. And this was a study in the States. And they found that the girls, the reason why they were texting had more to do with their social group, the social connections. So who's doing what? And did you hear this? Did you hear that? Kind of thing. Whereas boys were using it in a more kind of mechanical way to convey information, like, I'll meet you here, I'll meet you there, what are you doing tomorrow? So even though the boys and the girls were sending out about the same number of texts per day, the girls were more likely to become these compulsive texters. And this is important because that can actually affect their grades, as they call it in America. In other words, how well they're getting on in school. Because if you're compulsively texting, you can't concentrate for longer than about 6 minutes. Because they found that when the students, these are the compulsive ones, were at their homework, they couldn't stick to the homework for more than 6 minutes without grabbing the phone and getting onto social media and texting. So that's not ideal for their education. So, you know, it could be that this texting thing is damaging to girls' mental health, because they also apparently are more likely than boys to text about negative feelings, and then they go and they ruminate on these feelings and it makes them feel worse. Whereas the boys are just using it really as a tool for communication. There are exceptions, of course, but that's just an interesting finding from the States.
Indeed. And one more, Sean Duke, who's joined us on the line here. We're going to talk about something else about sight. And there will be a situation by 2050, I see, Sean, that half the world's population will be short-sighted by that year.
Yeah, we're going blind steadily, it seems. I mean, it's incredible. I'm short-sighted myself, so this.
And what is that? What is short-sightedness?
It's myopia. It's essentially the focus of in your eye, the lens isn't working properly. So where the light should be focused on a particular point, it's not focused on the right point. It's a little bit off, and that causes blurring. And you know, your eyesight, then you'll get a number, you'll get a -3 or a -6, depending on how bad you are or how out of focus you are. But in any case, they reckon this study, now this is a big study, so we have to take it seriously. It involved a lot of people in a lot of different countries. And what they found is that from 2000 until now, the sight across the world has been deteriorating big time. This isn't just in the West. You might think it's something to do with computers or, you know, the use of iPhones and stuff. But this has been going on for a while, and it's across the board, not just in developed countries. So they reckon now that as a result of what they're seeing, that 1/5 of the population or 1 billion people by 2050, so that is a lot of people, are going to be at significantly increased risk of blindness. So as well as the myopia thing, which is on the increase, there's this very significant myopia, they call it, a very strong myopia, which is essentially puts you at increased risk of blindness. And the question, of course, is why? Why is this? The first culprit will always, in these cases, be the computers and the mobile phones. But while they're part of the story, there's more to it. What they think it's more to do with is spending time indoors. So while the technology, the computers and the screens and the games and all that, they keep the kids indoors, that's really the problem with staying indoors, because other studies have found very strong evidence that spending time outdoors as a child, they don't know why, but spending a lot of time outdoors as a child is definitely preventative, and it reduces the onset of myopia. So because the kids are inside, it seems the next generation is going blind. And the figures are quite shocking. Like, for example, 96%, that's nearly all of them, of teenagers in South Korea are short-sighted. 80 to 90% of Chinese teens. Now, I don't have a figure exactly for Ireland. It might be less than that, but still, you're talking about a lot of people here.
Right. Sean Duke, the cool scientist, is seandukes.com for a science spinning blog. Thanks very much indeed, Sean. Good to talk to you as always.
Declan.
Thank you. Good morning to you.